How about this list of names we're covering today? Stamkos, Malkin, Hellebuck, Fleury, Kucherov, along with Colorado, Vancouver, Winnipeg, Toronto Maple Leafs, and the Pittsburgh Penguins. And we have the pet peeves and favorites while watching a game. It's TV guy turned announcer John Shannon letting loose on the Chirp Podcast with Darren Millard.
Boys, I'm Mike today. Just let everyone know, don't say anything stupid.
Heads up!
Oh, how'd that feel, old man?
What are you gonna do?
You guys are sensitive over there.
I'm gonna run you. I'm just waiting for my shift.
Just want to start by thanking everyone for the wonderful interaction from our outdoor hockey / small town rink episode last week. Great to hear your stories. That conversation, one of the most downloaded episodes of the Chirp Podcast ever. And it stands up. So evergreen, as they say in the business, it's always lush. So I want you to put it in your library. And if you haven't had a chance to listen to it, just save it for a day where you're on a longer trip and you can just soak up the purity of our game. And it was a wonderful, reflective discussion and storytelling about outdoor hockey with Vegas Golden Knight defenseman Zach Whitecloud. A wonderful way to end 2023. But we're cranking up the tempo today. Former executive producer of Hockey Night in Canada, the co-host of the Bob McCowan podcast, turned announcer John Shannon, accepts our invitation to bounce around the league and break down our sport both from a watching standpoint in looking at the players and a viewership point of view in your living room. What you like to see, what he likes to see when he's taking in a game on the tube. It's John Shannon on the Chirp Podcast with Darren Millard. Given the holidays and the passing of the new year into 2024, it's a good time to reflect because we've had all this time to just sit back and think about the game. John Shannon is the best person in the world to pick away at these thoughts. You're laughing already. What did I say?
Yeah, because my wife would never say I'm not good at anything. So it's
Well, I'm gonna pick away at your brain today, if that's okay. And some of it's going to be on the technical side and the broadcasting side, because one of our greatest episodes was going down that path of analysts and what makes a great analyst with you. And I want to get into some of the hot topics in the National Hockey League right now. Start off with I think a difficult one. If you had to make a choice, what would you rather do? Keep Steven Stamkos with Tampa Bay or re-sign William Nylander with the Toronto Maple Leafs for that big money? If you had to pick one or the other.
Well, the answer is simple. I go with the younger guy. This is a young man's business.
Okay.
You know, I'm a huge Steven Stamkos fan, but Steven Stamkos is on the back nine, you know? William Nylander's going to the third hole.
But he's also got three other guys making double digits in big time salary.
Yeah, but I don't think that wasn't the question you asked me. You gave me a choice between Stamkos and Nylander, and I picked Nylander simply because I think Nylander's upside for the next 8 years, if the Maple Leafs do sign him to the max deal, his upside is greater than Steve Stamkos for the next 8 years. Steven Stamkos is a Hall of Famer. Steven Stamkos should stay in Tampa. He should get hopefully another 3-year deal, maybe a fourth year if he's, you know, been good for the franchise for a long period of time, which he has been. But William Nylander can give me 8 solid years. And in many ways, Darren, where Nylander is in his journey in the game is comparable to where Stamkos was before he signed that last 8-year deal. Remember all the controversy? You were living in Toronto still. That was Steven coming home, and the whole concept of what the Maple Leafs tried to build around him, not just with a salary, but with corporate endorsements in Toronto, which would give him so much more money than anywhere else they could in the NHL.
So does Stamkos end up in Toronto if he doesn't stay in Tampa Bay?
Well, first of all, Steven Stamkos should stay in Tampa Bay. Yeah. I mean, I think that one of the great things about our game right now is that we still have a bit of loyalty to franchises and loyalty to players. Kyle Dubas had an opportunity to to blow it up in Pittsburgh. But after conversations with Sid Crosby, you know, it was okay. We're going to give these guys one last kick at the can. You know, I don't want to see Sidney Crosby wear another sweater. I don't want to see Alex Ovechkin wear another sweater, nor do I want to see Steven Stamkos wear another sweater. I like them as lifers. It may not be the way professional sports has gone, certainly not in in North America, when you think about turnover in Major League Baseball, turnover in the NBA. But I think that's really important. Call me old fashioned about that, but I don't want to see our great players move around at the end of their careers.
Really, what's the benefit? Like, why do you put so much stock in that?
I think that there's tradition. I think that, and again, I admit I'm old fashioned. But
so it's emotional for you. That's it.
Yeah, probably emotional. I'm not sure emotional is the right word, but I do think there's something to it. I mean, do you remember Michael Jordan as a Washington Wizard, and do you care? And no. In the end, it was just a blip. It was just a blip. And so when you go into Jordan's biography, you know, we never talk about Washington. We never talk about the time away from the Bulls. You know, he's going in. He went into Springfield at the Hall of Fame there as a Bull. So why waste our time with going to another team? Enjoy what you have in the franchise. You know, the give and take between franchise and player, between player and fans, I think is that loyalty is a big part of the game, and it's a big part of what has gone on in broadcasting business, sports. There isn't much loyalty anymore, and I think loyalty is something that is valuable when you think about what people do. Look at alumni, or I want to make sure I got the plural. Yeah, look at the alumni of teams. You know, it's important that they, when they go back to help support the franchise, that they're identified with a single team. I just like identifying players with single teams. Rod Gilbert should never have been like a Boston Bruin or a Montreal Canadian. Rod Gilbert was a New York Ranger. That's important to me.
Where's Wayne Gretzky in your books?
Well, he's an Edmonton Oiler. But that's a very interesting question. And he's an Edmonton Oiler now, I think, because, and I don't want to speak for Wayne, but I think Wayne identifies with the Oilers more now than he ever has. Particularly the fact that Connor McDavid seems to have carried the mantle of being the greatest player in the game. So there is some reference there. But do you remember the 18 regular season games in St. Louis?
No, but I remember the four that Marty Brodeur played there.
or how about the nine that Ryan Miller played?
Yeah.
You know, and so I love the fact, you know, when Sid signed a 13 year deal, Ovi signed a 12 year deal. This was in the previous collective bargaining agreement. You went, wow, those guys are probably going to finish their careers in those cities. And isn't that magical? It really is. Is it vitally important to, you know, world peace? No, it's not, but it's kind of cool. And I love loyalty in people, and I love loyalty to players, to franchises, and I like loyalty of franchises to players.
You know who's loyal is Bob Bender. Like, he was pounding the drum to get you on here today. He is loyal to you.
Really?
Yeah.
He needs to get a life.
He doesn't like us talking about him either. He gets very upset with that. Getting Malkin. Like, there's loyalty, and you talked about Kyle Dubas not blowing it up, and it feels like he just did his 1,000th, and he's already at 1,100. Is he, I don't want to say underrated or below the radar when it comes to appreciation, but he's not the first guy I do think of.
He's frustrating. frustrating.
Yes.
Particularly if you're watching the Penguins power play this year. Oh, my goodness gracious. I mean, all the power play was I blamed on Malkin all year long. So I mean, when you have Chris Letang or Erik Karlsson, and you have Evgeny Malkin running the power play, I don't understand it. But that loyalty, and it's the loyalty among players. I mean, I think there's truly something to be said that Sid said, you know, we want. I'm going to use nicknames, and I hate people using nicknames. We want Gino to stay. You know, and we want Tanger to stay. No, I didn't. I can't believe I did that.
That sounded
we
awkward
want Chris
for you.
Letang to stay. Yeah. That's it's really bad. I'm going to get people texting me saying, "How can you use nicknames?" That's in one of my memos. Please, no nicknames. So I think that there's part that says give these guys one last kick at the can, that makes a lot of sense, and I think that that's important for the Penguins. Malkin's a first ballot Hall of Famer. Will be greatly appreciated. We forget, you know, Darren, that he was the number two pick behind Ovechkin in that year. Remember?
It
was
I didn't Ovechkin forget. You first. May have forgot, but I never forgot.
Yeah, right.
I like him.
You can't even remember what time to get up in the morning. Are you kidding me? So here's a guy that has played a lot of really good hockey. But I must admit, there are times that I get very frustrated with Geno Malkin. I really do.
What do you think his calling card is? In 5 years, if I come to you and say, tell me about Evgeny Malkin, what are the first two things that you tell me?
That speaks volumes
right there. That speaks volumes.
Yeah, that I have to think about it is a really good point. The one thing that jumps out at me all the time is how successful he was for the Penguins and how successful the Penguins were when it was Malkin carrying the water when Sid was hurt.
Right.
Over the years, there were those times where neither of them were in the lineup or either of them were out of the lineup that the team still was successful because of the other guy. Sid did his job well when Malkin was injured and vice versa. Malkin was really good for the Penguins. And then when they got together, I mean, that's why they have three Stanley Cups. But the other thing I have to give Malkin his due and in many ways, Ovechkin too. I've been around this game a long time. And for so many years, European-based players would never really venture out and try to speak English to talk, to communicate in the media and do TV interviews and radio interviews. But Ovechkin and Malkin always have. And it took them time to learn how to do it, but they've done it. And now it's a great part of what the game is all about in those two cities because both of those guys are dedicated on every level, not just playing the game, but going out to events, doing radio and TV interviews, not ducking things because English isn't their first language. And I think that's an important part of why they become so vitally important to both of those franchises.
And when I ask you, what are the first two things that come to mind and we hesitate, it's more of a reflection of how well-rounded he is. But he doesn't have that standout one skill set that people will just gravitate to.
Well, I also think that there's a little bit of he makes the game look so easy, Darren.
Big body.
And you wonder at times when he's skating and stick handling, is he really trying hard? I mean, there are times you say, wow, is he, you know, where's the effort? Because the effort just comes so naturally to him. And believe it or not, I'm trying to compliment the guy because I think that that's a big part of what has been success for him. When it's on, I don't think there's a better shot in the NHL than Evgeny Malkin's. You know, he can stick handle really well and he can go in tight and he can be physical. There aren't very many deficiencies in his game ever. Except when you think, God, is he really trying? And we know he's trying. We know he's got a great competitive edge, but he makes it look so easy at times. You think there should be more. You know, as I said, winning, you know, have as many points as he has, winning three Stanley Cups, he's obviously done a lot of things well.
When do you think the next time we'll see a goaltender play 1,000 games like we did
Never.
With Marc-Andre Fleury? Never.
Never. I don't see it. I think the shelf life of goaltenders is shorter, much shorter now than it ever has been. I think because it's not because of game workload. I think the amount of practice time and the amount of effort put into practice now, it has become a tremendously tough job to play at this level. When you look at the great goaltenders of the last decade, I just don't see anybody getting past 600 or 700 games. I really don't.
Well, that's a strong statement and really telling of where our game is. And the current situation with goaltenders across the National Hockey League does support your stance.
Well, but it's again, not to talk too much about other sports, but are we ever going to see another 300 game winner in baseball? We're right. not. That's the
comparison that people made when I was at the Winter Classic recently. They always went back to pitching and baseball.
You know, the stress on the body, the stress on the arm in baseball, the stress on the hips and the groin in hockey. And the amount of up and down that goes on now with a goaltender and the lateral movement that goes on with a goaltender, I just do not see it anymore. I mean, the greatest sports record in the history of sports is Glenn Hall's.
Yeah.
It is the greatest record. You can talk about all of Wayne's 60 records, but Glenn Hall played 502 consecutive games in the National Hockey League as a goaltender. That record that's the only record that may never be touched. May never be touched. Simply because that's the way the game is played now. And you rarely play back-to-backs. I mean, this week, Martin Jones played back-to-back games in Los Angeles and Anaheim for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And everybody was in shock. How could a guy play back-to-back? The fact that, you know, it's 43 miles down the 403 or 405 has nothing to do with it. You know, and he was good in both games and won both games. So that to me is, we're just not going to see a 1,000-game goaltender ever again. And actually, here's the other thing about that one, Darren. I'd love to get your thought. The four guys that are 1,000 games are Luongo, Brodeur, Waugh, Fleury. All from the province of Quebec. All Canadian.
Luongo and Brodeur grew up like three blocks from each other.
These guys are great goaltenders. When's the next Canadian goaltender going to play 300 games? I mean, we've got the Four Nations Cup coming up in 25, and we've got the Olympics coming in 26. And as a Canadian, I'm saying, who's going to play goal for us? All our goaltenders are retired. They've played 1,000 games, or they're near the end of their careers. Carey Price can't play anymore. Who's going to be our goaltender? And that's the paradigm shift we've had in the position too. You know, between, you know, the Swedes, the Finns, the Russians, the Americans. Now we don't have a good Canadian goaltender. And I, you know, again, I don't need all the texts that Aiden Hill's a great goaltender because he won the Stanley Cup, and he is. But when I look at the list of goaltenders for international hockey coming in the next couple of years, I don't see many Canadians near the top of the list. Do you?
Didn't Tony Esposito play for Team USA?
Yes, he became a naturalized American citizen.
Yeah. Maybe that's the angle Canada goes, is try to woo somebody over to become a citizen.
Get Connor Hellebuck to become Canadian.
Yes.
There we go.
Is that not a natural fit?
Or Thatcher Demko. We'll guarantee you the starter spot. Come and play for your new country.
I think we're on to something right here. I think this is absolutely natural. Hey, what's the most overused camera angle in a television broadcast right now? What bugs you when you watch a game? Not the play-by-play angle, obviously, although you have issues with that.
Well, that bugs me all the time. Framing of the game camera is the toughest thing in broadcasting.
Explain that to people.
So the game camera is... So there are, and without getting too scientific or technical about this, the game camera should be approximately 60 feet back from center ice and 40 feet up, 60-40 ratio. Create the isosceles triangle of when the camera shoots the center ice dot, 60 feet back, 40 feet up. That's what most of the new buildings now work on for camera positions. But the key part of it is the cameraman has to use his panning ability and his zooming ability so that when he pans left or right to the goals, we don't see 14 or 15 rows of seats. I don't want to see people walking up and down the aisles. So he has to zoom in. And I'll tell you what, not everybody seems to understand that. So I spend my nights in my cave talking to people around the league saying, could somebody please teach the game cameraman in blank city that we're, you know, it's not just pan and pray that the puck stays in the picture. You know, it's an art. It really is an art. And it's something that I'm always concerned about on a daily basis in the National Hockey League.
What would you like to see more of from a technical
handheld? I want more handhelds. I want more corner handhelds. But again, it goes back to when the cameras are used in the corners to show the physical nature of the game, to show the speed of the game, they also have to make sure that they're wide enough to make sure they still show the net most of the time, and you can still see the ebb and flow of where the puck is going. So I want to see more handheld use in the corners, and I'm not a big fan of live game cuts of the cameras on the glass behind the nets, because I think it takes your eyes a second or two to adjust to it. And by the time you adjust to it, you're going to try to find where the puck is, and the puck's out of the picture already. Mm-hmm. So those are little things. Those are little things that I think that on a regular basis that the league should be much more conscious of and cognizant of how people watch the game.
You used to do that job, right? You used to facilitate that with all the regional broadcasters?
Well, and the national ones too. So when I joined the league in February of 2006, and so we created a case book. Mm-hmm. We created a case book to say, here's what the league philosophy is on these types of occasions. And we're trying to get people to do more isolated replays, which is to say cameras away from the puck so that you can see when Sidney Crosby doesn't have the puck, what he's doing. For the most part, I think it worked for a few years. And, you know, over the last 5 or 6 years, I think there are people that still try to do it. But I think that there's a new group of television people that have a different philosophy, and we'll see what happens over the next few years to see if that's successful or not.
Do you think it's better now than it was 20 years ago, was it better 20 years ago?
Well, first of all, the game is so much better because of the quality of the picture. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, HD, I mean, I still remember sitting with the commissioner in a restaurant in New York talking about how we're going to get the league to HD. And he said, it's going to be a life changer. And he was right. It changed everything. HD is built for hockey. It saved in many ways, saved hockey, because now you can see the puck, and it's easier to follow the game in high definition. You know, I still remember when we did the Olympics in 1998 in Nagano, Japan, and they had a test sample of an HD monitor with an HD camera in the International Broadcast Center. And you thought, it's not going to change anything. But it does. It has changed the whole concept of broadcasting, not just hockey, but I think it's helped all sports. I really do.
Yeah, golf is big time.
Golf, yeah. But I think it's helped hockey. Of the four major team sports, I think it's helped hockey more than any other, because it has allowed the viewer to see the puck easier.
From a viewer standpoint, is there a next big thing coming on the broadcasting side?
Well, I think they're trying. I think the player tracking is a work in progress. You know, I mean, and let's be honest, the biggest thing that has come, and it started controversially, and now I think everybody's accepted it, is the virtual signage. That is the biggest, and to the benefit of the NHL and to the benefit of the member clubs, and in the end, because of revenue sharing, to the benefit of the players, is there's a lot more money, because now you're selling rink boards for every city for 82 games, not just for, in theory, 41 home games. So that's been a real positive. And I think that it hasn't, here we are in early in 2024. I don't think there's near as many complaints about it. It certainly doesn't bother me like it did bother me 18 months ago, because I think that people have perfected it. I think the technology's better, and I think people understand how to use it better. And I think that will improve as years go on as well.
What do you mean how they figured out how to use it better?
Well, I think that I don't see as much movement of. Oh. I mean, I remember telling Gary on our show one day saying, listen, I don't have a problem with the virtual signage, but what I don't want to see is I don't want to see a Hyundai truck going faster than Erik Karlsson up the far side of the ice. You know, and he did laugh. You know, and I think that they've learned that those types of things are bothersome to the eye, and I don't see them as much. And I think that that's important.
I would get texts from people saying, the other team is using those rink boards to distract our goalie because there was movement, thinking that that was actually happening inside the rink. Who's the best team in the Western Conference at the midway or unofficial midway point of the season?
I think you have to say the Vancouver Canucks. I really do. I think that and
most surprising, you know, for sure.
Well, I think that's part of why you have to give them their due. I think there's lots of people still waiting for them to, you know, fall off the cliff, but you know what? They don't seem to be able, they're not doing that. And you have to give Rick Tocchet and Adam Foote and Sergei Gonchar and Mike Yeo a lot of credit for trying to, you know, when they do waver a little bit, lose a game or two, they get back on track. But it goes back to, you know, they have quality forwards. Goal scoring was never a problem in Vancouver, Darren.
No.
But keeping the puck out of the net was a huge problem the last couple of years. Thatcher Demko has been very good. Casey DeSmith, and when they acquired Casey DeSmith, I just said, there's Jimmy going to get another kid he had in Pittsburgh. But Casey DeSmith has done his job. But their defense, Philip Ronick has done a solid job there. Quinn Hughes, Tyler Myers has probably been the most rejuvenated player on the team, playing very well. The ability for them to go and make as many trades as they've had is staggering compared to what's happened for the rest of the league. I think there's been 10 trades and the Canucks have been involved in 6. So I think Vancouver right now, if you asked me that, you did, that I think Vancouver's at the top of the list. But you got to give Winnipeg their due. You got to give Dallas their due. I think one of the best stories in the Western Conference right now is that this isn't just a gimme between Colorado and Vegas anymore. There's a lot more teams in this conference now that are going to compete for going a long way in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
I've got 13 teams on each side right now, still in it as we approach this. It might be. And hyperbole, I tend to flow that way, might be the best playoff race we've ever seen with 32 teams in the league and 13 available on each side.
Yeah, the biggest challenge, though, is what you're seeing in the West, which is different in the East, is you are seeing teams who were lower-end teams, you are seeing them improve. The challenge in the East is, you know, if you look at who's in the playoffs now, it's not a criticism, it's a reality. It's the same old characters. You know, we really needed Buffalo, Detroit, and Ottawa to make the next step. And for some reason right now, those three teams are stuttering a little bit. And they need to find a way in the second half of the season. How can they turn that around in order to create a more competitive situation in the Eastern Conference? You know, Washington's a really good story. Mm-hmm. I didn't expect Washington to be this competitive. Pittsburgh, who have had their ups and downs until Christmas, seem to be a little bit better, although... You know, you never know what's going to happen there. I still, you know, you wonder about their goaltending. You know, the other night, you know, they came back and gave Washington a little bit of a fight, but Tristan Jarry was not very good, and they've committed a long time to Tristan Jarry. And that's something that I think you have to be concerned about in Pittsburgh. But it's right now for me in the East, if you look at it, it's the same old characters. And the new blood was supposed to come into those playoff races this year. And it really hasn't happened yet. Now, it could still happen in the second half of the season, but it hasn't happened yet.
Can Pittsburgh, Washington, or Tampa, I'll put them in, three bubble teams with great history and all former champions in recent times, can they, any of them still win? Are any of them still dangerous?
Well, I think that when you have the high-end talent that Tampa has, you can be dangerous. The question is, can you be dangerous on a consistent level? You know, I did a game in Edmonton with them earlier this year where the Oilers were in complete control. And the third period was all Tampa. And Andre Vasilevsky was lights out that night. And I think it was close to 50 saves he made. But then the big boys came to play. And it wasn't just Kucherov. It was Braden Point. It was Steven. Steven Stamkos got four goals that night. It was an impressive third period. But can they do that on a regular basis? The Tampa team of 2019 could do that every night. I'm not sure the Tampa team in 2024 can do it every night.
We're a month away from the NHL All-Star Game, the skills competition. Let's wrap it up this way. How interested are you in the new format with a schmill on the line for the skills competition winner?
It's always been the greatest challenge. I know we're tight for time, but I got to tell you that I produced the first skills competition ever.
You did?
And it was an unofficial one. So we were.
What do you mean unofficial?
Well, because the league didn't sanction it. We did it on our own as the network. In 1989 at the All-Star Game in Edmonton, we decided that we would do a hardest shot and fastest skater thing. But we had a problem. This is when the NHL was just a mom and pop, right? You know, yeah. it was the guys. So I knew six guys that were going to the All-Star game, and I phoned them and said, listen, we wanted to, you know, stay out after the morning skate, and we're going to get a jugs gun and we're going to measure shots and see who has the hardest shot. So we did. The problem was, after the fourth shot, the jugs gun broke. So then we did the fastest skater, and that was easy. The stopwatch didn't break. So we did a couple of those things, and we ran it in the first and second intermissions of the All-Star game that Tuesday night in Edmonton on Sports Channel America. So the following year, the league got behind it, and we did the first ever official skills competition in Pittsburgh. The 1990 All-Star Game. That was the one where Mike Vernon was the starting goaltender and arrived 5 minutes before warm-up and then decided that he would let Mario Lemieux score four goals in the first period on him. But we did a skills competition that year, and that was the first one. The key was always to create the proper incentive for the players. Always create something for the players to want to do it. Because for so many years, and all the years that I did this skills competition, whether I was with the network or the league, is guys would opt out because they didn't want to embarrass themselves. Because what if they didn't win? So if you can create that competitive level, this could be something special. And I certainly hope the $1 million and not worrying what, you know, whether it's an Eastern Conference victory or a Western Conference victory, and you can make it an individual skills competition, I think this has a chance and it might have some traction.
So they tried to go more to the fans with a skills night and with different events that played to the people in house or unique events like on the fountains or on the golf course.
Right.
This seems to be much more hockey focused. Is that just because it's in Toronto and it's a hockey market?
Well, I suppose so. The other thing is that, you know, it was easy to do golf courses and fountains when you're in places where it's not going to be, you know, 28 degrees Fahrenheit or -3 Celsius. There's not much you want to do outside on February 1st in Toronto. So you're basically bound and determined by what's going on inside the building. And I do think that there's something to be said for a traditional hockey market wanting traditional hockey skills, if there is such a thing. Mm-hmm. The only one I liked they got rid of, I loved goalie goals. The problem was there was only four goaltenders at the time. Then they did it that could put raise the puck off the ice.
That, when was the last time they had that? I remember Nabokov being in that.
Yeah, I can't remember. They all kind of after 40.
You had to
years,
shoot it over a barrier, yeah, and put it in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, Pittsburgh would win that. Jari or Nedeljkovic. They. You talk about Jari's resilience, yeah, but
tell you what, that kid Dostal in Anaheim's pretty good at it too.
Yeah. Does Steve Mayer phone you and bounce this stuff off you? We got to get you guys connected.
I don't know. I'm not sure I've met the man.
I knew we'd get the wrap up because Bender's worried we're going to trip down his boss somehow. We've been
very complimentary to everybody, yes, at the National Hockey League.
Yes, we have. And Bob should get on board with us with this. This stuff isn't going to happen by itself. Thanks, John. Appreciate it, buddy.
That last signal he gave you wasn't the wrap up.
No, it wasn't. And I'm not number one either. Thanks, Shanny.
Cheers.
Have to admit, I have two goals when John comes on. He's a former producer. He knows when you're going too far, but now he's an announcer, so he'll give me more latitude. And when I start talking about Bob Bender giving us the wrap-up sign, John is all too willing to go just a couple of steps further down the path. Because he's not the producer anymore. He's not calling the shots. So we can take this thing anywhere we want. And then we have to be respectful. And Bob, just know that we're having some fun with you. We do that because we love you. The big challenge with John is remembering what I've talked about off the air with him and not being afraid to bring that back on with you, because I talked to John probably five times a week. He's an unbelievable resource in the world of hockey, and it's great to hear Johnny on with his good buddy Bob McCowan, who's back behind the mic on their podcast, the Bob McCowan Podcast, as Bobcat recovers from his stroke. He's doing full episodes now, so that is wonderful. John Shannon, one of the favorites of the bosses of the Chirp Podcast, just a long-standing voice and influencer in our game. You heard his references to Gary Bettman and being able to lean on the commissioner of the National Hockey League. Next week, there's a good chance that we're going to welcome one of the new voices in the business. Looking forward to that. We're planning, we're scheduling, it's all underway. An announcement will be made upon confirmation. We don't want to put it out there and have something go awry. We want to make it sure it's confirmed. So looking forward to, just know, it's going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait to talk to you again. Thanks for being with us on the Chirp Podcast with Darren Millard.